blue presenter ribbon. I just didn't get myself on the program somehow. But that's okay. So I'm an assistant professor of sociology at Mississippi State and a research fellow with the Social Science Research Center there. And Kathleen is a medical anthropologist at the Social Science Research Center at Mississippi State as well. I'm particularly pleased because the organizing theme for the entire conference is Think Global, Act Local, because today I'll be discussing analyses of pilot data from the Women's Empowerment in Agriculture Index, or the WEAI, as I'll be calling it, which have been piloted so far in Bangladesh, Guatemala, and Uganda. After presenting some of our preliminary findings, I'll conclude with some ideas about the different situations that policymakers and practitioners may face when they try to act local in these rural areas in developing countries. So, for those of us who are interested in the subjects of gender, food security, and health, like Kathleen and myself, agricultural women in developing countries are an important group to study. In developing countries, women own less than 2% of all land, but produce more than half of all the food. This varies regionally as well. So in Africa, women produce 80% of all food, in Asia, 60%, and in Latin America, 35%. We have one country from each of these regions in our study, so we're again looking at Uganda in Africa, Bangladesh in Asia, and Guatemala in Latin America. Another paradox is that women perform 66% of all hours worked, yet receive only 10% of the world's income. And when they are actually paid for labor, women receive 25 to 40% less pay than men for the same work. We have this still in our own country as well, of course. And as the capitalist economy extends its reach into even the most remote traditional villages worldwide, having an income and having the ability to control the use of income will matter even more for both men and women. But because women have traditionally not had as much income or as much control over its uses, they will be playing catch-up for a long time. This will have a significant impact on women's ability to purchase land either outright or through credit. So traditionally, rural agricultural households are underrepresented or often underrepresented in cross-national surveys. So much of what we know about women's efficacy may not be applicable to very rural, small farmers. In order to fill this gap, USAID, Feed the Future, the International Food Policy Research Institute, and the Oxford Poverty and Human Development Initiative teamed up to develop a really great new survey tool, which again is called the Women's Empowerment in Agricultural Index. So the WEAI can fill the gap in our knowledge about rural women, especially in several ways. So it's specifically designed for application within agricultural communities. The questions include a series on agricultural activities done in the last year and whether they were done for subsistence or cash income. There's also a series of questions about ownership of productive capital, including land, livestock, farm equipment, homes, and transportation. It uses both household and individual level indicators to examine the influence of family structure and socioeconomic status on women's health efficacy and other forms of efficacy as well, but I'll be focusing on health today. In homes that include both a primary male and a primary female, typically spouses but not always, both members of the household were asked to fill out the same series of questions. This allows researchers and policymakers to examine the gaps between men and women within the same house, as well as across houses within the same community, and then across communities, across countries as well. So as a result, the WEAI adds a significant new dimension to scholarship on the impact of empowerment and inequality. So beyond simply asking about types of activities in agriculture, both men and women were asked to report how much input they had over whether they were going to do the activities or not, and then over how much input they had over the use of the income generated from these activities. They were also asked a series of questions about leadership within communities and participation in community groups. So as you were saying, community participation is so important. So we have data on whether they feel comfortable speaking up in public to influence their community and what sorts of voluntary organizations they belong to as well. So again, the data were piloted, the survey was piloted in Bangladesh, Guatemala, and Uganda in late 2011, data released to the public last year in 2012. We used these data to examine the impact of agricultural household characteristics on women's health efficacy. Kathleen and I have recently been awarded funding to go collect more of these data in Ghana and Mozambique, which will be starting next year. So we're very excited to expand the database on women in agriculture for public use. So we're using these analyses, some of which I'm presenting you today, to help influence our additional questions that we're going to ask. And I'll welcome your feedback as well. Think about ways we can improve the questions or ask follow-up questions, although we are going to try to maintain consistency with the survey index as it is so that we can keep building, you know, all of us who are working all over the world, we can keep building this database as we go. So the WEAI was designed to measure women's empowerment, agency, and inclusion in the agricultural sector to identify constraints on women's engagement in equality. And here I'm following Kabir's 2001 definition of empowerment as the expansion of people's ability to make strategic life choices, particularly in contexts where this ability has been denied to them. The overall goal of the WEAI project is to improve women's economic security and household and community food security. The survey creators developed two main measures to examine women's empowerment. The first is a composite measure of five domains of empowerment, which looks at the roles and the extent of women's engagement in agriculture. I should also point out right here that this measure can be constructed for men as well, which is one of the great benefits of this survey. So the WEAI doesn't assume that men are empowered if they're in agricultural communities and only women are disempowered. It acknowledges that rural men can be as disempowered as rural women, depending on where they are. That being said, today my focus is on women only. And the second measure explicitly looks at the gap between men and women within the same household. It's called the Gender Parity Index. The five domains of empowerment are production, including input into productive decisions and autonomy in production, resources, including ownership of assets, the ability to purchase, sell, or transfer assets, and decisions on credit. Income is measured as the control over use of income. Leadership is are they belonging to groups and feel confident belonging to groups and speaking in public. And then there's a time dimension. So the survey also includes a really elaborate time diary survey metric where you can measure women's workload and the amount of time they spend in leisure activities. For each of these 10 component variables, a categorical variable is created where 1 equals inadequate empowerment and 0 is adequate empowerment. And the details of those metrics can be found in the paper by Akira et al., which I have at the top there. It's on OFI's website. Our research question for our larger study that we're working on right now is, how do household characteristics, level of human capital, and level of empowerment affect women's control over decision-making for personal health, family planning, and protection from violence? So I'll start with a very brief overview of the dependent variables regarding decision-making and then move on to the independent variables in our analyses. So this question on the survey was phrased as, when decisions are made regarding the following aspects of household life, who is it that normally takes the decision? And this was applied to 13 aspects of decision-making within households. The ones that specifically it applied to health were what to do if you have a serious health problem, how to protect yourself from violence, and whether or not to use family planning to space or limit births. So I'm going to focus heavily today on family planning because it is the one that most directly reflects women's decision-making ability it proved to be the one that had the most statistical power when I was trying to explain, use household factors to explain it. I'll move a little bit quicker. So in Bangladesh and Guatemala, the modal response was for husbands and wives to make decisions about family planning jointly, which is interesting to start with. Uganda has a completely different trend there. So almost two-thirds of women reported that in their household they made no decision or that the question was not applicable to their household. So this is not missing data. It is truly they said we make no decision in our house about family planning. I'm going to skip over this for time. After the question on who makes the decision, it was asked For each decision made, to what extent do you feel like you can make your own personal decisions regarding these aspects of household life if you wanted to? So in Bangladesh, women felt most empowered to make their own decisions regarding family planning. Guatemalan women were somewhere in the middle. And for that very small group of women who reported that they did make decisions about family planning in Uganda, they felt most empowered to do so, to a high extent or to a medium extent, to make their own decisions about family planning. Get that. Sorry, I can come back to that if you are interested in it. For the statistical analyses, I used ordered Loget models because the variables can be ranked but not put into a continuous order with some the same distance between them. I used family characteristics, household socioeconomic status, food security, women's human capital, and the women's empowerment measures that I just discussed earlier to look at how strongly they felt like they could make their own decisions regarding family planning. And I apologize that these are so small. I do have handouts here if you want one. Kathleen has them here. I only have 30 of them. I'll just briefly highlight some of the findings for time. So what I found in Bangladesh was that was a very interesting finding, which is that women in higher SES households actually felt less empowered. These are odds ratios. So they felt like they had less power over their own family planning. But those who felt like they had empowerment in other decisions of life or other dimensions of life did feel more empowered about their family planning decisions. In Guatemala, the strongest predictors overall was whether women lived in a male-female household. So their household characteristics explained their feelings of efficacy over family planning. Just having a man in the household was the strongest predictor, and it was very much lower. So you can see that 0.017 odds ratio. So they felt much less, they had much less efficacy than women who were in women-headed households only. And finally, in Uganda, for again a very small sample here, down to 86 women. But for that very select group, you can see that the largest coefficient by far is that women who could read and write were had much more efficacy over family planning, and those who were disempowered in terms of agricultural decision-making and credit felt much less efficacy over their family planning. So getting to just a few brief conclusions, thinking global, women who are less empowered in the economic dimensions of life and the speaking in public and community community participation, they have lower health efficacy. So if you think globally, that holds true across these three countries at least. In Bangladesh, being sort of wealthier or higher socioeconomic status leads to lower family planning efficacy, and I'll welcome your input on that. In Guatemala, having a man present in the household best explains lower efficacy. And for policymakers and practitioners, this might be the hardest thing to address. This sort of speaks to deep-rooted patriarchy and gender dimensions that may be harder to overcome with policies. In Uganda, being able to read and write is the best predictor of high efficacy. Again, just a few more conclusions for global health equity using the WEAI. Helping agricultural women gain more access to agricultural education in terms of productive inputs and use of income generated from agricultural activities may improve health efficacy. Family planning efficacy is perhaps the best way to truly understand women's efficacy in these agricultural communities. And we do need to ask more follow-up questions of women who report no decision about family planning. So with that, I thank you very much, and I'll look forward to your feedback at the end.
Great paper. Thank you very much.